This podcast is brought to you by Zeno Mueller, three-time Olympian and gold medalist. Imagine a 20-second 2K PR by the end of this season, or even sooner. Elite rowing coach by Zeno Mueller is a competitive advantage. The ERG score is the SAT of rowing, so find out what Zeno Mueller can do for you. Make sure to use coupon 4STARS, F-O-R-S-T-A-R-S, for $200 off on any program he has on his website. Zeno is an Olympian and graduate from Brown University, coached by the legendary Steve Gladstone. He'll get you right, he'll get your 2K down, and you'll be a better athlete after his training. So make sure you tune in with Zeno and get some coaching at EliteRowingCoach.com.
On tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, we have something that's going to make you sick.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the 4STARS podcast, where today we get to hear from the head coach of SMU Women's Rowing, Chase Graham. Chase, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So this is your first season as the head coach of SMU. Previously, you were at Duke, where you were coaching there for some time. Now you're at SMU, going from North Carolina to Texas. What's the environment been like? Is it a culture shock?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, I surely didn't know really what to expect when I moved here, but I'm actually a lifelong Dallas Cowboys fan, so it was kind of a dream come true in some regards. And, you know, I get to be a head coach of one of the best women's rowing programs in the country. So, you know, honestly, it's been way less of a culture shock than I expected. I'm living in East Dallas, just north of the lake, loving it. It's been great. So.
That's awesome. So your schedule released earlier in the fall, but we'll get into that right now. So your first race coming up is March 15th against Iowa. It's in Waco, Texas. So, and Waco has been on the rise a little bit. We've been seeing more races happening in Waco. So March 15th, that's in 8 days. 8 days is your first race of the spring, which is, you know, it's coming up. Then following that, you're going to also on at your home course, you're racing Texas on the 23rd or the 24th. And then where I'll be at as well. Crew Classic, where everyone says the start of the spring season, April 5th and 7th. You got the Big Ten invite in Sarasota on April 18th to 20th. And then you got, obviously, your AAC championship last year in the AAC on May 12th. And then hopefully, with everything, you know, fingers crossed, NCAAs on June 1st in Bethel, Ohio, which I've heard is a great place to row.
Yeah, no, it's a great place to row. I grew up, you know, I was a Midwest rowing boy. So, you know, when the Midwest Rowing Championships were there, yeah, I'm fond of that course. Racing the Cincinnati Juniors there, got my first bronze medal actually racing there. So I'm very excited to hopefully be there this end of May.
That's awesome. So what were the lessons learned as an assistant coach to make you better as a head coach?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, as an assistant coach, you're managing up, you're managing down. So, you know, I was recruiting director, associate head coach. So I'm trying to help, you know, manage the staff and manage the team, definitely learning all the things that need to be done to make the head coach's job easier. And the classes are going to look really good in the future years ahead, trying to solve problems before they become a problem. You know, sometimes you're the translator from, you know, the head coach gives maybe a stern message to the team. You're trying to break that down maybe individually with some athletes, being, hey, like, this is what coach means needs to happen. Like, you know, they really got your back. But, you know, as assistant coach, like sometimes you're just softening the blow maybe, or, you know, you just have different connections with different athletes that maybe the head coach or other assistants don't have connections with. So, you know, you're just using them to try to get the best out of all your athletes. So definitely a ton of logistics behind the scenes as an assistant and just, you know, constantly busy. You know, I think it's funny because sometimes the athletes are like, what do you guys do all day? Like, you guys aren't really that busy, are you? And it's like, guys, like, you know, we don't really stop. Like, we're figuring out what shoes you're going to be wearing next fall. So yeah, the list goes on and on, what you're going to eat for lunch in 80 days. Yeah, it's fun in that sense that every day is a little bit different. But yeah, it could go on and on.
There you go. I do want to ask you this question because we talked about this in our phone call about junior day, the influence of having junior days on teams. So now the NCAA, you're basically able to commit to a team your junior year in rowing, which was not like that when I was in high school. Everything was done your senior year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the purpose, at least from my point of view, was that it was going to be a positive thing for the athletes to have more time. But I immediately kind of felt like it was going to do the opposite effect and give athletes less time. in a lot of regards, just because coaches can ask for commitment sooner, and that's what they're doing. I mean, kids are committing by fall of junior year, and it's left and right. And so, you know, it's not like, well, you know, now I have 2 years to take official and unofficial visits. It's like a lot of the spots are getting scooped up, you know, junior year. So, you know, there's definitely still some movement in the fall, especially from an international perspective. But, you know, in some ways, like I talk to a lot of parents just as much as I do the recruits. And a lot of the parents, you know, just kind of feel like it's too early for their kid. And, you know, for some, they've known their whole life, they want to come to SMU, and that's great. We certainly are able to, you know, make that work. But, you know, on a big perspective, I kind of think like these athletes are young, they're developing a ton from fall of junior year into summer of, you know, going into senior year. So I see a lot change in that time period just from recruiting these guys over this period of time. So I don't know if it's for the best, to be honest with you. I kind of just personally wish that we were still on, you know, doing official visits in the fall of senior year and going on from there. But yeah, here we are.
Yeah. I mean, I just know from, you know, even like the high school teams that I talk to and coaches, that, you know, their athletes are leaving junior year going on officials. And I'm like, wow, that is a huge change. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but is the limit on five official visits still around, or they can take as many as they want, right?
You can take as many as you like, just one per school, unless there's a head coaching change.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a big change too. All right. Next question here we do have, and this is kind of a funny question. Your favorite steakhouse in Dallas?
I have actually only been to one so far. I've been to Knife. I've honestly sent more recruits to the best steakhouses. From what I understand, Papa's Bros is the best. I've yet to make it there myself, but I'm definitely excited to check it out.
There you go. And this is also a funny question too. Your favorite Duke men's rower?
Oh, Eamon for sure. Yeah, he's the one that I, you know, kind of knew the most, talked to the most. He's doing some really cool things on the rowing scene right now. So I'm loving his work. I think he's, you know, creating a lot of great exposure for the world of rowing. So we certainly need it, and it's been fun to watch what he's done.
Yeah, Eamon's crushing it. This other question we do have: how much do you tink with the boat's rig? Daily, weekly, monthly, or never?
Yeah, on the rigging, I mean, I really try to not touch individual rigging on the boat for a very long time. I made the mistake of doing this the other day. You know, we're rowing a lot of mixed and even lineups right now, and so, you know, I tinker one seat, I change the pitch, or I adjust the a seat to be a little higher, and immediately, like the next week, I'm rotating an athlete around, and it's like, oh well, this seat has the high seat, and it's just creating a headache. So honestly, really try to avoid it for most of the year. Keep everyone pretty standardized until we get into lineups, which, you know, on a small team like kind of we have right now, I'm not really trying to be in 1v2v first four second four lineups. I mean, just trying to keep it really competitive every day, keep it interesting. We've been coaching them for a long time, since August, and so some of the technical things that maybe haven't been able to be fixed, I can adjust with rigging. And so you get that temptation to start going in there and messing around with it, because, you know, there's an element of trial and error too, and you kind of want to get that sorted out before racing. So it's a yearly thing, but I definitely become more and more disciplined to not touching it.
Yeah. So Duke obviously is a part of the ACC, and SMU is joining the ACC next year, along with Stanford and Cal, which, you know, powerhouses. Do you think that the ACC is going to be the best conference? And you might be biased because you've been in it for a while, but do you think it's going to be the best conference for on the women's rowing side of things? I think it will be.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it has the argument to be. I mean, you got Stanford, the reigning national champions from last year, joining the ACC. And if you look at last year, if all of these teams were in the ACC last year, we're very excited about that. Very excited for the challenge. It's going to be really nice having a full B final. Hopefully we're not in it, but you know, just being a part of Duke the last 8 years, the petite final at ACC's was, I believe, three boats. So, you know, if you were a crew in there, and we weren't often, but, you know, just to watch that flight of boats come down versus the A final, which was six crews, you know, it's just not as exciting, right? Like, but now the ACC will have 12 crews, so you'll have a full A and B flight. So I think that's going to be just great for the student athlete experience, raise the level of racing across the board. And so I'm super pumped. I love being in the ACC. I'm definitely super fortunate to be here at really a special time at SMU. So yeah, couldn't be more pumped about it.
Yeah. Today's podcast is brought to you by Pocock Racing Shells, a name synonymous with championship winning boats and groundbreaking innovation for over a century. For 113 years, Pocock has been the heartbeat of rowing, crafting boats that have conquered waters, broken records, and earned medals like no other. Our legacy is your assurance of quality and performance. Our dedicated customer base includes prestigious Division I colleges and universities, as well as countless smaller schools and clubs across the USA. We're honored to be your trusted partner in the world of rowing. But what sets Pocock apart? We remain family-owned, committed to preserving our rich tradition of handcrafting every boat right here in Everett, Washington. With unparalleled service, staff, and decades of knowledge, we are well prepared to help keep you on the water and ready for race day. Be sure to catch us at this year's upcoming regattas, where we'll be unveiling the future of rowing, the X1X and the X4, the next evolution in our X Series boats coming in 2024.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Within, you know, the first, 5 days of being announced that we were going into the ACC, the school raised, over $100 million by like 10 of its donors. So huge support from the alumni network at SMU for the whole athletic department. And so it's been really cool to see all the exciting things going on that end in terms of facility planning, you know, just, hey, coach, what do you guys need? You know, is it more staffing, more equipment, anything we've kind of wanted to do? It's been yes, yes, yes. And so that's been really exciting. I mean, football is finishing, I think, $150 million end zone expansion right now, where we're getting a brand new student athlete dining hall, new locker rooms, new weight room. So it's very exciting to have all of that kind of things that are going to be finished by this summer. So as a new head coach coming in, I couldn't be more excited about the kind of changes. Everyone at SMU is all in, so it takes quite the village to do it. And it seems like we have that behind us. So that's it's definitely exciting.
A lot of athletes want to know, like, food perks, because, you know, as it is, food is very expensive, and being an athlete, money is not the most, feasible. So have you enjoyed the dining hall at SMU, or have you seen that your athletes have been liking it too?
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about being in Dallas and at SMU are the food options. I mean, there's extensive amount of great food options on campus and off campus. And so we're constantly kind of trying something new. And for our athletes, you know, they're fed really well. The new dining hall is going to be really exciting for that end, just because, you know, at Duke, we had training tables Monday through Thursday for dinners. But here at SMU, we're actually going to have breakfast and lunch every day of the week. So even more opportunity to, you know, just refuel at a high level.
That's awesome. Cox and wise, because, I mean, I think every coxswain on a team could make a huge impact on a squad. Have you seen the coxswains on your current squad right now that are making huge strides to the team?
Yeah, I mean, coxswains are definitely, I think, the glue between the rowers and the coaches. Yeah, I mean, they're all doing a great job. They've all made huge strides since we've gotten here. Joe Wilson's probably the most experienced one that we have and the most senior. And we've figured out a relationship of, you know, her trying to read my mind at times, but sometimes really successfully doing it, and other times just learning, like, oh, you know, maybe he wants something different. But, you know, it's a really fun dynamic. I really enjoy it. I think that relationship's so important that it doesn't just become like a coach badgering the coxswain all the time, me speaking down to you. I really treat it as a collaboration. And I think that's the real key part, is just us working together, not bullying around the coxswains, because I've just kind of seen, you know, that happen sometimes, where, like, it's a tough job, you know. No, it's one of the hardest jobs. I mean, yeah, you know, going 6:45 on a 2K is really hard, and that's a tough job. Sure, like, the rowers definitely have challenges that are their own, but the coxswains are, I mean, I feel like you're constantly under the spotlight. You're constantly steer here, steer there, call this drill a little differently, hold that pause a little longer. You're trying to execute what the coach wants. And while I coach them very hard, it's because I respect them. And I often tell the rowers, I'm like, guys, if I was coaching you as hard as I was coaching the coxswain, like, you know, you might not handle it so well. So, you know, we got to support our coxswain. So
do you prefer recruiting scorers or sweepers?
I wouldn't say that I have a great preference between the two. I mean, I mostly would like the sculler, just because I know they've probably been in a single, whereas the sweeper may have been in an eighth their whole life. you know, I love that small bit experience. Whereas if it's a sweeper and they spend a lot of time in a pair, that's awesome. I know I'm getting someone that's really well experienced and, you know, can handle that when they get here versus the single almost every time they've been, if they're a scholar, every time they have experience from being in a single. It's very rare when someone just spent their whole life in the quad. So I don't really have a huge preference on it, but I mean, I'd say that would lean to be where my preference would come from. That being said, we have a lot of scholars coming in next year, which I'm pumped about because, you know, I think they make great sweep rowers.
And also, what do you think is the most important part of the rowing stroke?
Yeah, great question. I talk a lot about the recovery just because you spend 70%, around about 70% of it in a 2K going from the finish to the catch. So I think, you know, you can do a lot of good on the drive. Obviously, you need that horsepower and you need the power curves to match up and you need to generate a lot of speed. But if you spend a lot of time messing it up, you're just not, you know, you're going to wear out in that third 500 and not be able to stay efficient throughout the race. So, I mean, I like to coach the recovery a lot on the drive, focus on working the blade very hard from start to finish, and I'm staying connected. But yeah, I'd say I'm definitely a big recovery coach.
So a lot of coaches mention the front end. So that's not something that you focus on, like catch or anything like that?
I think a lot of people over-obsess about the front end. It's just putting the blade in the water. And certainly, I don't know, I think from probably when we started rowing, our coach's mind did, you know? I mean, you start out coaching the catch, and it is important. You know, I don't really feel like you have to talk about it a lot. If you're doing a lot of reduced slide work, quarter slide, half slide, and varying the rate and getting to higher and higher rates and really pushing the crew, not necessarily to keep hitting the catch harder, but keeping those catches light and quick and finessed, you know, without much dialogue about it, they get pretty good at not really making a lot of disturbance there. Yeah, it's important, but definitely just one part of it. I think the finish is quite overlooked, and maybe the most important thing is how you finish the stroke. And it's actually quite challenging to keep a hold of the water through the finish, especially as the blade straightens out and unloads in the water, hopefully. So I spend a lot of time on that end, actually.
And about the ERG scores, because obviously those are, as many people say, the SAT of rowing. Do you look at that more than other characteristics, or are you kind of trying to balance everything out?
Yeah, no, great question on the ERG. I mean, we're looking for efficiency. Yeah, sure. Like the height and weight, super important. That it's in the ballpark of, you know, a certain range. And for the ERG, you're looking for efficiency, you know, are they progressing, you know, as we recruit them, like, are, you know, have they been rowing 8 years and they're still going a certain speed, or have they shown good progression over that time? Because, you know, I kind of feel like it's unlikely they're gonna, you know, drop a minute when they get to us, and we'll see, you know, 10 to 20 seconds on some athletes, and that's really great. But I look at the whole picture when I'm looking at the athlete. I've seen a lot of big ergs go slow on a boat, and I've seen big ergs go fast, but I've also seen some not the typical recruited erg scores go really fast in an eight. So, you know, I think you can't write anyone off, and I'm more so looking for the character of that person, you know, what kind of heart and soul do they have? Yeah. I mean, are they just willing to suffer on the handle day in and day out and be a great teammate? It's kind of number one thing for me.
That's such a big component of a team as well. Like, there's a lot of people think like you got to be just, you know, great athlete. You got to be showing up every day. But do you actually enjoy it? Like, do you actually enjoy being there? Are you having a good time? Like, are you going to help other people improve as well and make the whole team great, not just yourself? If you see athletes on your team that are not making sure that they're doing what they need to do every day, showing up, putting their head down and working at it, or they're complaining, you know, 'cause I personally see a lot of athletes complain about lots of things. And excuses add up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't hear the complaining. I'm sure. I think for rowers and coxswains in general, you know, there's a healthy level of banter that can happen behind the scenes of complaining. There's harmless complaining, and then there's toxic complaining. There's the, oh, that, you know, that was really hard workout. Like, that really sucks, but I'm excited about tomorrow complaining. And then there's the, yeah, like, you know, coach just won't get off my back. He really doesn't like me. That's why he's always coaching me. And there's just a different, like, kind of, I think, complaining. And so you have to be careful about which two you allow, if anything. But I mean, as a head coach, like, I don't tend to hear any of it, to be honest. If I did, I have no problem telling someone that they don't have to be here. You know, I'm like, you guys choose to do this, and hopefully you love it. And that's certainly what we want to foster here on our team, is a love for the sport. It's the number one thing. Seeing a lot of kids walk away, you know, just from my time as a junior coach before, you know, I came to the college level, and I always hated that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, complaining, it's there's a healthy mix of it, sure. But hopefully it's you know, we're excited to get back in the boat tomorrow and get to work.
Why do you think there's a decrease in when juniors start rowing and they quit? It's not so prevalent in other sports. Like with other sports like basketball, football, baseball, even like, you know, softball or soccer, like these, they tend to have athletes stay in it for a lot of years, unless they like get terribly injured or something and they just stop doing it.
I think there's probably a lot of angles to it. I mean, for one, they've got a great junior team, maybe a great culture on that team. Their best friends are on that team. They like the relationship with the coach. And then sometimes they get recruited somewhere and maybe they didn't quite figure out if they had were going to have that type of same relationship with the new coach. And I think it could sometimes just get, you know, confused of like, they like their current situation on their team, but is it really a true love for the sport? Because sometimes when you go to college, it's like, well, here's the college coach and they have their thing and their way of doing things. And it's different from your high school coach. Not saying it's good or bad. Sometimes it's better. Sometimes it might be worse. And so I think sometimes in the hype of getting recruited and thinking you're going to a certain school, they may just get clouded in their judgment of making the call of this is the best fit for me. You know, I think as someone who's on the recruiting side now versus on the junior coach side, when I was helping kids get recruited places, I always wanted to try to fit the kid with the coach that I thought would help them continue to be successful. Sometimes the kid just really wanted to go to a certain school and I'm like, I don't really know if that's going to be a great rowing fit for you. And they had to figure that out. And sometimes it ended up with them leaving the sport because like you were saying earlier, you have to love the sport. You've got to just love working really hard and the daily grind of it. You've got to, it's repetitive. So, you know, as coaches, I try to keep it fresh. I try to keep it fun, but you know, there's definitely an element of like, we're doing similar drills a lot. We're doing similar focuses for a big part of the year. So in a world where there's so much going on, they've got their Apple Watch, they've got their phone going off. I think it can just be distracting. And so as a coach, you know, I'm thinking a lot lately about like coaching these guys off the water and off the ergs, like just how to be an athlete in a very busy world. So, I mean, I think junior coaches need to be talking to their kids about this sort of stuff. And you certainly have an element on the junior side of like parents wanting their kid to get recruited somewhere. And so when they do get recruited, it's like, oh, the mission's accomplished. It wasn't go to college and go fast. It was, well, you're going to row so you can get recruited. So there's a lot of angles out there on it, but, and I've seen a lot of it. So, you know, who knows?
I think you touched on something that needs to be talked about a little bit more. And a question to go off that is, what is the most important aspect of training for a junior rower to improve the ERG score?
For a junior rower to improve the ERG score, I mean, it's simply fitness and it's mental and physical fitness. But, you know, there's also an element of overemphasizing the ERG score and just creating a general love for rowing and just being an athlete. There's got to be a careful balance to it because I think you could end up driving some really great rowers away from rowing just if you force the erg, you got to hit the score or you're not fast. When, you know, if they put a little more time in and just developed in the boat and found a love for the sport of rowing before they find a love for the erg, sometimes one becomes before the other, you know, I think. But let's say they already, you know, they love the sport and they're just trying to go faster on the erg. It's really about just figuring out like, well, what is their limiting factor? You know, are they quite strong and powerful and just don't have the endurance, or are they really aerobically fit, but they're not strong enough? I mean, for a lot of juniors, they probably, you know, need to be getting stronger. I mean, you're young and developing. And so, you know, having a good strength program is important. Yeah. If you're able to have good coaches for that and get taught how to do things properly, it can be massive.
Who's had like the most impact on you that made you want to become a rowing coach? And obviously the process of being a rowing coach is, it's, there's a lot, I feel like in every job, there's different things, right? Like a coach can have certain criteria they need to meet every day, right? They have to make sure they get their checklist done. But there's so much stuff on the back end that people don't see, right? They think it's easy. Like you were talking about when your athletes at, like, I think it was Duke or something like that, were saying, like, you know, what do? Your assistant coach, like your recruiting coordinator, like, oh, that's so easy. Oh, this is that. Like, it's not easy. You're trying to figure out which of these junior rowers who you haven't met before are going to fit on your team to succeed and grow, not just as an athlete, but as a person, right? So I'm just curious to know, like, who made you want to become a rowing coach and where did that start? Because I always feel like being a junior rowing coach is an awesome reward. And then going up to the next level in college, you're seeing the athletes and they're a little bit more mature and they have more goals and it's different type of goals.
Yeah. The whole time you're going along there, I'm just like flashing back to all the coaches that I've had throughout my life. And I feel super blessed to, you know, have had a lot of great coaches. And that started, I'd say it started back in my football career in junior high. I just felt like I had, you know, great coaches that they gave me a chance. And, you know, I didn't start out as the best on the football field, but I kind of was someone who, when they go through the drills, would figure out things quickly and progress. And I don't know, I think I had coaches that allowed that growth to happen and they encouraged me in the right ways. And I improved very fast. And, you know, that worked really well for me. And all through junior high and high school, I had great football and rowing coaches. And then when I went on to college, similarly, I don't know, it'd be really hard for me to say one person, you know, it's tough. I just think most all of them have just been able, they believed in me and they cared about me off the field, out of the boat. That was really important. And I think just coaches that I've worked with, you know, as well as like, you know, being my first assistant job, I was working with Kelly Harris at Marietta College. And I specifically remember when I was first starting out, you know, I'm figuring out my coaching voice and I was like seeing other coaches do things. And I'm like, well, maybe that's how you coach, you know, like, you know, yelling or being more in someone's face. And then I remember one time Kelly set me down and she's just like, Chase, like, you can't talk to people like that. And you need to, this is kind of how you need to deliver your messages. And I don't know. I feel like at that moment I stepped back and then was able to kind of watch other coaches and be like, oh, this is what she means. And it really helped me, you know, figure out who I am today, which is couldn't be further from someone who's yelling in an athlete's faces. I'm actually probably a fairly quiet coach. And, you know, I try to deliver the messages that need to be delivered without delivering excess. You know, I have really high expectations for athletes to work hard all the time. The coaches that had direct impacts on me, and then, you know, growing up in the 90s, Phil Jackson, the Bulls, I was a huge fan, still am. You know, read his books and all that. So yeah, I mean, I'm just always studying the great coaches out there and trying to, you know, take things away.
Why do you think that the same schools tend to win most races?
A lot of the schools that tend to win a lot, I mean, it comes down to great leadership, great cultures, which certainly the coaching staffs play a huge role in. But often when you look at those programs, the coaches have been in place for a very long time, where they've just had success everywhere they've been and, you know, really good at establishing cultures of winning and, you know, getting leaders on board to support them. And that includes the athletes and assistant coaches. So, I mean, ultimately, it always comes down to culture, and that is your people and everyone willing to do the work and, you know, give up a little bit of themselves for the greater good of the program. And I think if you're able to do that from top to bottom and not have a lot of people that are concerned about me, 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 you're going to have success. Once you kind of get things rolling, it's, I don't know if it's easier because you definitely have a target on your back and you get pressure, you know, you're pressure to win when you're winning. So it's not always easy to manage that pressure. It's good to see different teams winning. I mean, I think in the last few years we've had, this was what, Stanford's first national championship. They've been pushing for a while to get there and they finally did. Really cool to see. And, you know, when I was coaching at the junior level, Derek was at Oakland Strokes and they were winning national championships there. And so I knew it wouldn't be too long before, you know, they got there, you know, with his team at Stanford. So it all comes down to just culture and being consistent and always kind of being willing to improve and adapt to the things that are changing.
So I don't remember last year if SMU went to Crew Classic, but what made you want to go to Crew Classic this year?
Well, SMU was not at the Crew Classic last year. I'm not sure the last time the program went out there, actually. But for me, I mean, the last time I was there was 2015 with Saugatuck, and we won. It was the first time we won out there. We've been going there for a few years. And when I first got into Saugatuck, they'd never gone really to Crew Classic as a regular thing. And I think they haven't stopped going since we started back in like 2013. For me, I just remember going out there in 2013 with that like lightweight eight at Saugatuck for my first time. And I'm like, this is a really cool way to start out the spring. I mean, it's San Diego. It's a great, great weather, especially when you're coming from Connecticut. It's good to get out of the snow and into the sunshine. So I haven't been back since 2015, but I just kind of feel like for this team, you know, it was a top 10 team last year. I didn't see them going to like the Crew Classic or Head of the Charles or like a Henley Royal Regatta. I just felt like as part of the rowing experience, like you want to do some of these fun regattas, like going to the Crew Classic, going to Head of the Charles, going to Henley. Like it's just a big different stage where there's a lot of spectators. There's some, you know, hype around it. I mean, it doesn't mean anything if you went Head of the Charles. Not really. Same for Crew Classic. It doesn't mean you're going to win NCAAs or anything like that, but it's just a fun rowing experience. So I kind of wanted to provide that for our team, I think. Create some hype around the start of the season. See some of the best programs in the country there. So that's certainly exciting. And logistically, it's easier to get out there from Dallas than it was from Connecticut. So yeah, I thought, why not?
I'm excited about Crew Classic this year. I'm going to be there and A lot of teams are showing up this year, so I'm pumped to see the results and how that goes. I know that certain lanes, if you get in a certain lane, you're kind of screwed. But I mean, I think hopefully, John Fife over at St. Joe's Prep, he told me, he goes, we got to be prepared if an alligator comes out in Florida and wants to bite our bow off or something like that. You got to be prepared for anything to happen, just because you're going into a race, knowing that you might be the top seed, are you going to actually push through if there is something that happens, It's how you train for those types of situations. Obviously, what you're doing with the team now, it's a different type of team. A lot of athletes, some stayed, some didn't. Those of you, I'm not going to get into what happened because it's not my place, but I will say for those of you who do know of what recently happened with SMU in Tennessee, new coaching staffs happen all the time. Okay. It always happens. But are you looking to NIL for any of your efforts in recruiting at all? Is that something that you've been thinking about with your coaching staff?
Yeah, I think Neimans, like this, you're thinking about that no matter where you are, in the collegiate rowing sphere. So certainly being at SMU and in Dallas provides a ton of opportunity for our athletes. So, can't give away specifics, but we're definitely looking to support our athletes at the highest level in the country, so our athletes can enjoy the benefits of the current climate. So yeah, definitely excited about what we got in store for our program.
That's amazing. Well, look, I'm excited for this rest of the season and especially for the future of SMU rowing. The previous coach had definitely built up the team, and I'm excited to see how the progression of the program is. And also just, the new recruits that come in and seeing what you can do as a head coach, and also, just seeing Dallas be more on the map, I guess you can say, for college rowing. So, coach, thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I wish you all the best this year.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a great time, and look forward to hopefully chatting with you again in the future.